Herzlich willkommen im Hacker-Morgengrauen. Im Stream der Sieber ist der Raumstation unter Berlin-Mitte. Das ist schon der zweite Talk heute. Wir begrüßen diesmal Alex. Hallo Alex.
Hallo, guten Morgen.
Alexander Sander zum Thema Public Code in der Pandemie. Public Money, Public Code genauer gesagt. Also wir möchten doch gerne für das sauer abgesparte Steuergeld auch Dinge zurückbekommen und nicht Dinge, wo wir hinterher nicht ran dürfen und nicht reingucken dürfen und nichts mitmachen dürfen. Und welche Bedeutung das hat und warum das langfristig noch wichtiger wird, das wird Alex uns gleich lang und breit erklären. So lang und so breit wie nötig, bis ungefähr 1 Uhr. Und wenn ihr Fragen habt, dann benutzt den Hashtag RC3 und dann werden wir versuchen, das in einem Pad zu materialisieren und noch kurz darüber zu sprechen um 1. Gut, Alex, dann halbe Stunde für dich. Viel Spaß.
Ja, vielen Dank. Good morning, everyone. 12:30, good morning. That's lovely. So in the next 30 minutes, I will talk about public money, public code, and what role free software played during the crisis and still playing. And so my name is Alexander Sander. I'm policy consultant of the Free Software Foundation Europe, and we are a charity that empowers users to control technology. And we do believe that free software plays a crucial role here. So to get us in the mood, I think you all remember it was around March last year when the borders have been closed because of the crisis. So we wanted to avoid contacts, and one solution back in the days was to close borders. And as you know, free movement is a fundamental right, and to fix this issue, software played an important role, and contact tracing apps, for example, have been pushed on the market to fix this, and I will talk about this a bit later. And also we have seen us and many of us in home office, and again here, software was very important, and as well free software played an important role. And as said, in the next minutes, I will tell you why. And free software is important, and what free software solutions helped us to tackle the crisis. So everybody loves free software, especially I think here around Seabase and the Congress, free software is pretty well known. However, let me introduce you quickly the concept of free software. So it's also sometimes called Libre software, open source software, but free software always comes with 4 freedoms, and it's the freedom to use, study, share, and improve. This means free software gives you the freedom to use the software for any purpose you want without any restrictions. You are free to study the code, so it can be analyzed by anyone, so you can see the code, you can see what the software is going to do, what it does. You're also free to share the software without any limitations, so there are no license costs or something like this, so you can install it on as many workstations as you want, and so on. But here, please keep in mind, the price doesn't matter. So free is not coming with the price in general. So you can also sell free software, and this is also done. But you are free to share it afterwards. And also, you are free to improve the software. You can modify it. And by this, you can give back to the community. And whenever we have these 4 freedoms to use, study, share, and improve, then it is free software. Or as said, there are many names like open source, Libre software, and so on. And these 4 freedoms helped us during the crisis a lot when it came to software solutions. To give you a better understanding of the 4 freedoms I just named in practical terms, I have this slide here for you, where I will first show you the problems of proprietary software. So software which is not coming with this 4 freedoms, and on the other hand, on a practical way, the 4 freedoms as a solution for free software. So first, The major problem with proprietary software is that there is no interoperability at all. You might have this problem as well a lot. So it's the thing that you are stuck in an ecosystem, and if you buy a piece of software from one vendor, you always have to go back to this one vendor to like broaden your system. So programs are not working together, so there is no connection, and by thus we call it interoperability. This is something we don't see at proprietary software. And by thus you are coming into this vendor lock-in. As said, if you buy one piece of a software, let's say Office solution, then you need to buy a mail program or a presentation thingy or something like this from the same vendor, because as you want to have interoperability, these proprietary vendors only give you interoperability in their own system. But if you want to go out of the system, then you run into struggles and there's no interoperability at all. So this is a problem with data sharing with others, but also like collaborative working and so on. And this also means that these pieces of software come with unpredictable costs. So first of all, you have to buy a piece of software, then you don't know how much you have to pay for the other pieces you might need in the future, but also you don't know at one point you have to pay for upgrades, for updates, and so on. And so it's really hard to estimate the costs for the software in the future. And this is also a huge problem which is coming with proprietary software. And also, as you have to pay for the license first, and mainly also like for a license for every workstation and so on, your investments are lost. So you can't invest the money into the coding, but you just pay for licensing. And so that's why your investments are also just lost in the very beginning. And we have seen during the crisis, I will show you some examples later, that there's also a very low acceptance by citizens if they have to or if they are forced to use proprietary software. And in the end, there are also security issues. As you can't look into the code, you might don't find backdoors, for example, or you can't see if a software really is going to do what it's supposed to do. And so therefore, proprietary software also comes with security issues. And so on the other hand, we have the solution. It's risk-free software, because we have these open standards. This is coming from the four freedoms, as you are free, for example, to look in the code, as you can modify it and so on. And as it's based on open standard, we have this interoperability by default. And so we can like work together across borders, and it's very easy to collaborate if you are using free software, because you have this interoperability by default. Also, you are highly independent through the free licenses. So the four freedoms are always guaranteed. When it is free software, so you are free to modify and adapt it to your needs. You are free to share it, to use it in as many workstations as you want, and so on, as just said. So you are highly independent. And by thus, you can also collaborate. And this is also something we have seen heavily during the crisis, that collaboration is key, especially when it comes to global crisis. We need to work across borders, we need to collaborate across borders. And so with this collaboration, we can share risks, but also costs. So this is a big advantage of free software. And also you can involve local partners. So this is especially something we see when it comes to the use of free software within administrations, public bodies. So whenever governments are using free software, then there's a huge involvement of local partners, which is also like a strengthening, not only the software project, but also the region and so on. And it is transparent by default, as you can see the code. This is very important. It's also one of the freedoms. And because of this transparency, you can see the code, and by thus you can, for example, identify bugs. You can fix bugs quickly. And so free software gives you the advantage to make your software even more secure. And so free software isn't secure by default, but you have the chance to quickly find security issues, but also other issues, and fix them immediately. So, and this is also a big advantage. So you don't have to go back to a vendor and ask him if he can fix something. You can simply do it by your own, or the community can thus. So With all of this, you can also already see why it is a very good idea to use free software in general, but also in particular during a crisis, which is what we have seen, especially during the Corona crisis. So we need to work together because global problems need global solutions. So, and as already said, during the Corona crisis, we have seen a lot that there was free software around and that it was very good that we used free software and not proprietary software, and that there, especially in the beginning, there were very interesting debates around it. I think you might remember the tracing apps and so on. But we have seen that, yeah, in global crisis, the demands are very similar. So, for example, when it comes to contact tracing or something like this, we have seen that specific software and specific hardware is and was needed. And for home office, for example, or for remote working, we have seen this, and especially with the tracing and now with the certificate apps, we see that there are more or less the same demands around the world. And especially if we look at Europe, there are more or less the same solutions as we want to, yeah, be yeah, a European region without borders and so on. And here, again, the solution is that we need interoperability. So we need these open standards to be able to collaborate, to work together, and to also use the free licenses and to spread the software as wide as possible. And also that we need to foster the innovation and collaborate. So this, we have seen it a lot, that it was very important that it's not only coders who work on a project, or not only a nation or a specific region working on a project, but that we have to involve many stakeholders from many countries working on specific projects. And this is only possible with free software, as we can work and collaborate across borders. And we have also seen that the transparency of free software gives us acceptance. And this is very important, especially if you want to roll out software projects on a very large level. You need acceptance, especially by citizens, that they use the systems, and therefore transparency is and also was key. And yeah, set as you can involve all stakeholders, this is also a big advantage. And I want to give you a concrete example now with the apps. I think most of you are using at least one or two of these free software apps which are around at the moment. And when the debate started, it was also like 1.5 years ago, we were discussing these contact tracing apps, and it was a discussion if it should be decentralized, if it should be free software or proprietary software and so on. And we very quickly jumped in with a press release and advocated around governments with three demands, and they are still valid today. And the first demand is that no matter what it is, these apps need to be used voluntarily. So this is not that much on free software, but it's also key that it's voluntary. But then it also must respect fundamental rights. So whenever these apps are introduced, and when there are health data, for example, in these apps, then we must respect fundamental rights, for example, the right to privacy and so on. And we can only see if fundamental rights are protected, if the code is transparent, and if we can prove that the software is really going to do what it's supposed to do. And in the end, so we said, all of these apps and solutions need to be free software. And we have been very successful with this demand. And there was, as I said, a very huge debate. And what made us very happy was that there was not only a debate, and not only the apps have been released as free software, but there were some fundamental statements during that time, for example, from the World Health Organizations. And they said there need to be full transparency, and these apps need to be open sourced. And also the European eHealth Network, so this is the European Commission and the member states of the European Union, released a toolbox for the member states where they said defined how these mobile applications need to be designed in the European Union. Here they said also that it need to be open sourced. And what makes us very happy that they not just said it need to be open source, but they also said it's good for reuse, it's good for interoperability, it's good for the security and the transparency. And so they followed our arguments fully. And this is very important that the European Union, but also the World Health Organization quickly understood that it's only free software that can help us during this time and the crisis. And we have quickly seen that there is this community engagement and that it's not just about hackers and coders who improve apps, but it's also about translations, for example. So we need people with language skills, but also, especially when it comes to the tracing apps, we also need like scientists from all areas who can tell us how such a virus spread and so on, and how we can trace it. So here we have seen how global cooperation can work and can like lead to a situation that we have a very good app in the end, which helps us in this case for contact tracing in the very beginning. And here you can see what happened on Git, but also with the CoughPass app, we have seen that it's now available on F-Droid. Unfortunately, in Germany, the CoughPass app, so this is the app which gives you your COVID certificate that you are vaccinated, or for example, and so in Germany, this app was free software, but it was not released on F-Droid, and F-Droid is a free software app store. So the better app store compared to Play Store, where because in F-Droid you can only find free software. But what happened is that the community again stepped in. So volunteers helped us to make it possible that this app is now also available on F-Droid, and by thus, it's also possible to use it on more devices than before, and it's also free to use it without any Google services, which is also very important when it comes to privacy and so on. So here we have seen that with the use of free software, we can make this app available to everyone, and we can ensure that fundamental rights are respected, and that everything is based on free software, and that you, for example, don't need Google services to use these apps. But on the other hand, what happened later, so after the good news, there are also always bad news. In October last year, the European Commission released an open source strategy. So just half a year later, after they said when it came to the CoughPass apps and COVID apps, where they said it's important that they are transparent because of security reasons, interoperability, and so on, they gave themselves a strategy. So the European Commission released an open source strategy for themselves, how they want to act and how they want to use free software in the future. And unfortunately, there they watered down a lot. So it was not like that they said, so now we learned and we want to have now everything on free software, because this is our learning from the crisis, this is our learning from the last decades. No, they said they want to release their solutions wherever it makes sense to do so as open source. And they also want to be in a position to choose non-open technologies where there good reasons to do so. So, but at the same time, they never ever defined what are good reasons and where something makes sense. So this is completely open. And so what is good on the one hand is that they have something like open source strategy, so that they are thinking about it, that they are giving themselves a strategy. But at the same time, if they're releasing this paper with so many loopholes, we fear that there won't be a major change here. And I think, or we do believe, that not only the crisis have shown us that free software is the way to go, but also like, last decades and also before the crisis, we have advocating a lot around this, and we have seen many administrations who have very good experience with free software, not only when it comes to crisis, but also in general. Again, here, think about home office, think about video chats, what we are using here today, Jitsi, a free software tool, but also BigBlueButton is, for example, one. So nobody has to be forced to use proprietary solutions like Zoom or something like this. So there are very good free software tools on the market, and there are good reasons to use them, especially when it comes to administrations, because they are in contact with citizens, with us. And I think this is, again, a learning from the crisis. Transparency, for example, is key, but also interoperability, so that we are free to use whatever device we want, but are still in a position to communicate with administrations. So, and they also said they want to set up a small open source program office. There is no budget at all for this. What sounds very good from the very first page, so think open, that's the title of the strategy, turns out to be a paper full of loopholes. And we are still in contact with the European Commission in order to learn what they are doing. From what we have seen so far, it's not that much. They just released another new paper, and still we don't see any budget. We don't see any people working on this, so that we are specifically hired for this after the strategy was introduced and so on. Stay tuned. Hopefully we can release some news on this soonish on our website, but the Commission is very, closed when we ask about their Think Open strategy. Which is at the same time very strange. And so, as said already before the crisis, not only us, but hundreds of organizations and also tens of thousands of individuals demanded that publicly financed software must be made publicly available under a free software license. And I think with the crisis, we have learned that it's now even more important than ever before to tell administrations and to convince administrations to use free software. And it's not only about crisis, but it's also about digital sovereignty, for example. So also for administrations, it's good to know what a software does if they use it. So it's in the core of our state digital infrastructure, and therefore the administrations need to have the full control over the software they are using. And this is also true for everybody else, like for us individuals, but also for companies and civil society and so on. So it's, in terms of digital sovereignty, a very good idea to use free software. But it's also about our money. It's public money, it's taxpayers' money, and public bodies are financed through taxes. And that's why they have to make sure they spend their funds in the most efficient way possible. And as I've shown to you, I think there's only one solution, and this is free software in the end. And to give you one number here, and just imagine this money would have been invested in free software in the last years. So the governments and public bodies, public administrations, are the largest purchasers of IT goods and services, and they comprise up to 27% of the revenue of software firms. And so now just think about if we would use these 27% and invest it in free software, and think about the solutions we would have had during the crisis already, for example, to be able to have a secured workspace for home office and so on, but also to be available to be in a digital administrations. And I think, this number is very important and shows us that there are many investments lost because our administrations are still buying proprietary software and didn't switch to free software. So in the end, free software gives you many advantages. You can, as said, involve local partners. So whenever administrations or public bodies are procuring free software, we can see that it's also strengthening the local economy. So licensing fees are not going anymore to Ireland and the US, but it's also highly efficient, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel again and again. So administrations all over the world have pretty much more or less the same demands, And so why do we have to reinvent the wheel again and again and buy one piece of software again and again? And so there's absolutely no reason. And it would be way more efficient to collaborate. And we can also see that when administrations are doing this, it's happening. And also, again, we have this digital sovereignty. So you are, can have software which is tailored to your needs. And you can modify it whenever you want and adapt it to your needs. And it's not just like a vendor's business model, what you are following. And so therefore, free software is a very good idea. So, and if you are in line with our arguments and if you like our arguments, you are still free to sign our campaign. So 3 years, 4 years ago now, we started our campaign, Public Money, Public Code, where we demand that whenever it's public money, the code should be also public. And so we want legislation requiring that publicly financed software developed for the public sector need to be made publicly available under free software license. And we are seeing in more and more treaties and also, for example, in the coalition treaty in Germany, we have some sentences on the use of free software. And so we see that there is some progress here, but still we only need to we need to do more pressure here. We have to fight for public money, public code still. We see more and more commitments. But at the same time, we need to also follow up with the implementation, as we have seen, for example, with the European Commission, their open source strategy, which is called Think Open, but full of loopholes. Now it's important to see that there's a good implementation, because this is key. Papers are important. Sure, this is the first step, but now we need to make sure that there's also a proper implementation. And if you want to support us with our demand, you can also sign this campaign if you haven't done already, or reach out to us. We have several activities. We have also an activity package telling you how you can contact your local administration and convince them to use free software. Lots of our volunteers are doing this, sometimes successfully. And so I think this is important that we continue to talk about the advantages of free software and also use the example from the crisis I just have shown to you and continue our efforts to convince administrations to switch to free software. And with this, I want to end my talk and would be up for questions if there are some in the chat in the meantime.
Thank you very, very much. There's essentially one question popping up on our pads here, and this is about this term of digital sovereignty and whether digital sovereignty funded by national state actors would eventually mean that we are sooner or later hacking for the national security agencies of our countries. And what that would imply to free software and the ethics of free software.
There was a bit background noise, so I'm not sure if I fully got it. But it's about if we would if our community would hack or fix governments. Software, if this is in line with the ethical principles of free software, was this the question, or did I get it wrong? I'll try to address this. I think governmental bodies are using free software or should use free software as they are handling our data, as they are communicating with us. And for sure, also governmental bodies are using software for surveillance, for example, for reasons we might personally don't like. This is very different. So, nobody should be forced to invest the time or like resources to help governments to fix their software. And it's also, again, on procurement. So as said, free software doesn't need to be priceless. So also for us, it's important that if public bodies are using software, then whatever it is, it should be free software. And this gives us the chance to see the code and, for example, to discuss. And this also opens debates. If we want a solution which is going to work like this, and this doesn't necessarily mean that we contribute to the code, but we can also contribute to a software by discussing what it does. Is this something we want to have for our society? Is this a software we really need? And this is, I think, only possible if we have something like, for example, a repository for governmental software which is used, and then we can like check what this is, what they are doing. And it doesn't mean that that you have to do it, but you are free to do it. And I think this is important, and this is also what we have seen during the crisis. So there are some general or fundamental discussions about the apps and about tracing and so on. But this is possible because it is free software, and it doesn't mean that you have to contribute to the code or that you have to use it. So as we said, it's important that it's that people can use it voluntarily. But still, you can contribute even if you just debate around it. So, and I think this is important, and that is why we want free software. And I think in the end, it's better to have a free software project where you can see what the software does and where a government tells you transparently what they are going to do instead of doing it completely secretly.
Very well. So that demonstrates that we have maybe another problem or a new problem, but a constructive one, something we can work on. And this whole issue of digital sovereignty and national state actors must be discussed, as you said. This was Absolutely. The main question from the PET. So thank you for the talk this morning.
And, yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, it was fun. And yeah, enjoy the rest of the conference then.
Yes, I hope you do too. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. See you. Bye-bye.
Everything is licensed under a CC BY 4.0, and it is all for the community.
To download for everybody.